This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to this week's Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Actually, let's take two on that. Three, two, comes a plane.
Mm-hmm. I hear it.
Yeah. Three, two. In the city, there's ambulances. I hear there's planes.
This is way better than an ambulance.
Yeah. Okay. Three, two, one. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions, questions related to all manner of issues in the field of health, medicine, and nutrition. You're entitled to email us to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll endeavor to answer as many questions as we can. And how are you doing this week, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you? Middle of summer,
a little vacation time for 4th of July. So we actually did sort of tandem articles around vacation time.
Yes.
I wrote about something called WWS. Do you have WWS is the clickbait title of the article. And it's work withdrawal syndrome. It's people who are just so used to working that they get kind of depressed and irritable when they have free time. They, you know, just not have been able to cultivate a leisure style in their lives. Mm. And you wrote some tips on vacationing and how people can optimize their recreational time. It's no accident that recreation is about recreation, recreating yourself.
Yes.
So in an ideal spirit, we're offering advice, and we hope that you're enjoying your holidays. And are not suffering too much from WWS. Some of you probably are so thoroughly in relaxation mode that that notion may sound ridiculous, but I have to cop to having suffered from that to some extent myself, because I'm always in the fast lane, working really hard, and sometimes it's hard to wind down. All right, so let's go directly to questions.
Okay.
What do we have in the mailbag?
We have an email from Deanne. Deanne says, I'm another podcast listener, so yes, I sleep with Dr. Hoffman every night, too, LOL.
Wow, all right.
I've listened to 95% of your podcasts, going as far back as I can in your archives. I'm an integrative junkie.
All right.
So, Deanne is asking about vitamin D. She says, I was rotating 5,000 IUs with 10,000 IUs a day. My blood test came in at 68. And I'm wondering, I'm in a quandary over Dr. Gaby's take on vitamin D3. And I agree the sun is the best source, but it's not realistic. What is your take?
Right. Hmm. Okay. Well, this is a really good question because, I mean, these things tend to run a cycle. I mean, first, it was vitamin D was ignored for a long time. Mm-hmm. And in medical school, they cautioned us about vitamin D, and they said it's very, very, very toxic at high doses, so make sure that people take no more than 400 international units. That was back in the 1980s before we recognized the benefits of vitamin D. I was an early adopter in terms of the belief that vitamin D could be therapeutic, that a vast number of Americans are either deficient in vitamin D or suboptimal in vitamin D, and so I got on the bandwagon with supplementation early, as you did, Layla.
Yeah.
Then, usually with these things, there's a, and this is like with any type of news, there's a backlash cycle. It's like, whoa, now maybe you're taking too much. And in fact, looking through some recent headlines, there was several headlines like more people than ever are taking way too much vitamin D, or you might be taking way too much of this important supplement. And this coincides with a press release that was based on a study at the University of Minnesota by Dr. Mary Rooney. And I think this study references a clinical trial that found that vitamin D supplements made elderly patients more likely to fall and fracture a bone. Wow, you know, that's like, oh. But in this particular study, if you look at the study carefully, they used an extremely high dose, 100,000 international units once per month, which is kind of unnatural. So, you know, this is not, I mean, if you average it out, yeah, 100,000 over 30 days averages out to, you know, what, about 7,000 a day. But
actually about 3,000.
Let's do the math here.
Yeah, I'm actually, I've got my calculator, 100,000.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So, 3,333.
You're right. Yes, exactly. So, that's not that much, but it may be that when delivered in this way, you know, for the sake of convenience, that it's not that good. It doesn't necessarily suggest that it's bad for you. And, you know, there are many studies that suggest that it's very important to be taking adequate vitamin D. So, I do respect Alan Gaby as a thoughtful guy who has the gumption to buck the trends. You know, there's, you know, a lot of people who just kind of go with the flow, and they don't take a critical look at some of the fads in whatever field they're involved in. And that's something that Dr. Gaby is really good at. And I respect his caution flag about ultra-high-dose vitamin D for everyone. I think it may be a mistake when people get a blood test and their vitamin D is 45. They go, oh my goodness, my vitamin D is 45. I need to up my vitamin D intake to 5 or 10,000 a day to get it to, you know, 80 or 90. Except in certain instances. I think vitamin D can be therapeutic, like a medicine, in certain conditions, in cancers, in people who have multiple sclerosis, for example, autoimmune diseases, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. There, I want to use it like a medicine. But then the question is, do we really want to pound vitamin D in everyone? Is it necessary? You know, I'm getting perhaps a little bit more middle of the road, slightly conservative in my dosing of vitamin D these days, especially for people without serious medical problems. I'll share with you personally. I take about, I think I'm taking about 2,000 or 3,000 per day, myself personally, and I get sun as well. And if I feel like I'm coming down with a viral infection, I may really hit the vitamin D hard. I may take 50,000 two or three days in succession. But I don't do that too often, because if you do it too often, you will overaccumulate vitamin D.
Right. And interestingly, we have a question from Alan, just along the same line here about vitamin D. Alan says, I'm a 7-year-old male feeling fine. I've been taking large amounts of vitamin D3. He's been taking 8,000.
Yes.
For several years to obtain a level in the 50s.
Okay.
Now, there are some people where it takes them a long time to get their levels up.
That's correct.
And he's wondering also if he should cut back based on Dr. Gaby's recommendations. But for those who have trouble, we could talk about the reasons for people who are not able to, within a period of time, get their levels back up. Mm-hmm. Certain medications,
right.
Steroids, for instance, something
genetics,
like that.
Vitamin D receptors.
Vitamin D receptors, malabsorption.
Yep.
Kidney or liver compromised function, and with kidney or liver where vitamin D is actually made, and obesity.
Obesity, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, vitamin D is sequestered by the fat cells, and that might be something.
And there's racial disparities also, and it's actually thought there's two reasons that dark-skinned individuals, especially African-Americans, have low levels of vitamin D. One is that they, you know, they're not too concerned about getting suntans, right, because the skin's nice and dark anyway.
Yeah.
So they're not going to, you know, unlike Caucasian people who deliberately go to tanning parlors and spend time in the sun to bronze their skin, they're less likely to do that. That's number one. Number two, there may be something about the carrier protein for vitamin D in the bloodstream that shows that their vitamin D is lower, but spuriously so, when it may be actually adequate. This is on the cusp of research right now. Mm. So, you know, bottom line, I'm still sticking to my guns. I think vitamin D is extremely therapeutic. I think low vitamin D is a cause of major problems. I'm way short of a recommendation. People stop taking oral vitamin D and, simply tan themselves as a means of getting adequate vitamin D in their system.
But after a certain age, like 60, maybe even younger.
Yeah, the skin doesn't absorb.
We don't have enough 7-dehydrocholesterol in our skin to help with that conversion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that could be another reason that elderly people tend to be quite low.
Right.
In vitamin D, besides being maybe homebound or nursing home or anything like that. Yeah.
And you know, and I'll tell you, it's not just based on theory or reading. It's in my experience with patients over time. I can't tell you how many patients who I've seen who've had, especially, this is where it's really noticeable. They have frequent infections, frequent upper respiratory infections.
You know, yes. Like,
I just keep getting sick. I'm sick all the time. I get a cold, then I get sinusitis, then I get bronchitis. We give them vitamin D. Well, we give them certain other supplements, but I'm pretty convinced it's the vitamin D. And their immunity really bucks up in response to adequate vitamin D. So there's where it could really make a difference. And then, you know, certainly not doing our osteoporotic patients any harm because their bone density is coming back better and better.
Yeah.
And our autoimmune patients are healing under the influence of high-dose vitamin D, you know, often 5 or up to 10,000 per day.
Yeah.
So, I got to apologize a little bit for my interviewing style. I'm not that confrontational with my guests, especially someone who I hold in high esteem like Dr. Gaby. And I want him to air his views, and I know that it stirs the pot, and I know it's confusing, but I think that's the reality of the field of nutrition. There are controversies. Some people expect it to be like the Ten Commandments coming down from Mount Sinai, you know, the very, very, very clear-cut and established guidelines. But we're just beginning to have a better understanding of how nutrients work in our body, what the optimal levels are, where when to hold and when to fold with nutritional supplementation. And so I bring to the fore controversies about nutrition. Not all my guests agree with one another, and I don't agree with all of my guests completely. But I really do have a lot of respect for Dr. Gaby, and I've learned a lot from him. When he enunciates a concern, I'm gonna air it.
Yeah. And you know, this is part of learning. I mean, it's the ability to think critically about everything. And we have to look at the controversies, and we have to consider all of them. So All right.
Good.
Well, Deanne is thanks for listening to the podcast.
Indeed.
She goes to sleep with you every night, Dr. Hoffman.
That's such a comforting notion as I turn up the lights, you know, together with thousands of individuals. Particularly women of a certain demographic.
Okay. We've got an email from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've just heard an ad for a new business that's opening up. Jean is in Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. That's opening up here, and they administer IVs with and without vitamins and also glutathione B12. My question is there any benefit or risk to a healthy, active, young retiree to get IV vitamin C or glutathione if there's nothing wrong other than getting a little dehydrated from not drinking enough in the heat? What would you say?
That's really an interesting question. And I've been a real proponent of IV therapies for almost since the beginning of my practice. And they've been part of my practice for a long time. Until recently, when I've downsized a little bit my office to be more of a consultative practice, where when I see a need for people to get IVs, I send them out. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that, literally when we moved to our new space together, Layla, there was consideration. We had one room besides mm-hmm. my consultation room. And the question was, well, let's, you know, that was in the previous practice, it was an IV room. Shall I just perpetuate that? Well, that would have meant no room for Layla.
Yeah,
which
that's
to me
right.
is actually much more consequential in terms of patients' outcomes, you know, to get expert nutritional consultation, to really be helped with implementation towards a diet change, I think is actually more important than getting some IV nutrients or even oral nutrients as supplements.
So, thank you.
Yeah. So on the other hand, there are situations where people need IVs. Does everyone yes. need an IV? So, for example, do I, as a healthy 64-year-old, take IVs routinely? And the answer is no. Now, I'm not saying that my opinion on this is the end-all and be-all. I think there's some practices where IV therapy is integral to the treatment of virtually every patient, and even patients who come to Optimize get IVs. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that they are, you know, life-extending or health-preserving for people who have healthy diets or in otherwise relatively good health and able to take oral supplements. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting to me is this the popularity of this IV paradigm that when I started, I was really a renegade. I think maybe in the city, entire city of New York, maybe there were a half a dozen places to get IVs. And then it exploded, it burgeoned, to the point mm-hmm. now where it's offered as almost like, you know, something like a, you know, food delivery service.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Do you have the app? You know, it's like dial in, uh-huh. you know, dial in your IV and then, you know, the nurse will arrive or whatever. And they'll pop it in your vein and do it at home. Or, you know, if you have a big wedding or an affair, you can hire a van. And then all the hungover guests, you know, before the next morning's brunch can troop in and get intravenous glutathione to mm-hmm. You know, overcome their hangovers.
Or what they call a banana bag, all those B vitamins.
Yeah, I mean, they're very popular in Vegas, you know, people who really hit it hard on the, you know, uh-huh. in the casinos and at the shows, you know, do an all-nighter. And then they'll get an IV in the morning. That's popular. That's a sort of a millennial thing now.
Do you remember the show ER?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I just remembered an episode where George Clooney, after a night of drinking all kinds of scotch, comes in the morning and has Mark Green, the ER attending, give him a banana bag. That's where I, that's
right.
what I just remembered.
See, there you go. That's that was a trend-setting moment in the 1990s, yeah. you know, when they, yeah. you know. If, you know, party boy George Clooney is doing it, you know, it's got to be
right.
good. It's like, what was his name? Dr. Hansen or Dr.
I forget. What was his name?
Oh, yeah. There's a term for it. By the way, you know, those medical shows, the shenanigans that go on those medical shows are but a pale imitation of what happened in hospital. there's some true aspects to these, you know, clandestine affairs and romances and crazy happenings. It's an intense place. Okay. So the answer is, I don't think that these are necessary. Mm. It's an interesting trend now that, you know, they're using this just for the general public for prevention as opposed to very targeted therapy. I recently interviewed Dr. Alan Gaby. We were talking about vitamin D, and one of the things we talked about was his popularization of the Myers cocktail, which is magnesium, B vitamins, vitamin C, in a kind of rapidly delivered small bag. Doesn't take a long time to get this little bag of nutrients. And it's a really helpful thing. It's really helpful for many conditions. It's helpful for energy. It's helpful for mood. It's helpful for asthma, allergic reactions, for mm-hmm. cardiovascular conditions. You know, then there are other forms of IV therapy. There's chelation therapy, which takes hours and involves EDTA and pulls out heavy metals. There's also high-dose intravenous vitamin C, which is useful for cancer, and there's some really nice research on that coming out of the University of Kansas under the auspices of my good colleague,
Dr. Driscoll.
Dr. Jeannie Driscoll, who has been a guest on the program. And that's where this is, that's serious. It's not frivolous. It's for cancer. It's being researched. It's, you know, they're demonstrating that cancer cells are inhibited in their growth and that vitamin C given even during chemotherapy is compatible with chemo and actually augments the benefits. So, it's funny how, yeah. you know, pop culture and science are converging on this. I'm actually in some ways gratified to see this take off as a pop culture phenomenon. But, you know, it's a little frivolous, I think, when it's deployed in this way without medical supervision or any, understanding of, you know, how it might impact the individual.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Gene, thank you for your question. Wow. All right. And stay hydrated.
Yeah. I mean, the best way to stay hydrated is to drink.
Right.
Just parenthetically, you know, people say, well, I need that IV to be hydrated. Well, when do you need an IV to be hydrated? You need an IV to be hydrated if you're vomiting or having severe diarrhea uncontrollably. Okay.
Yeah.
You need an IV for hydration if, say, in a race, you've gone way past your oral hydration capabilities, or maybe you just haven't planned properly, and you're one of these people who approaches the finish line and passes out, you know, and yeah. maybe is in danger of some major electrolyte shift or imbalance, yeah. where just drinking isn't enough. You've got to pump in,
the electrolytes,
electrolytes
yeah.
along with fluids to resuscitate right. the individual. And that, you know, I've seen that in long distance races on super hot days. Other than that, I mean, oral hydration is fine.
Yeah.
So
the only other instances I could think of is in a hospital in NPO.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
that's why they put a line in there, because people who are really sick, they can't control their hydration properly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you for your question, Gene. All right. We have a question from David. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you for sharing all of your knowledge and experience with your audience. Thank you for listening, David. Is it safe to consume water from type 1 PET plastic bottles? That's polyethylene terephthalate.
That doesn't sound good, but you've done a little research on that.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely phthalate. So we're talking about when you look at the bottom of the bottle in the triangle where there is a number.
That's like a recycle icon with a number inside,
right?
Yeah, like arrows going around clockwise.
Exactly. This is the number one that's within that particular triangle. No. Phthalates are not good for us, and neither is this type 1 bottle. It's used in plastic water bottles. It's used as the plastics that are storing our salads in the grocery stores, you know, those clamshell type of plastics.
Oh.
The blueberries are in, and the cherry tomatoes. It's in there all over the place.
Yeah.
It's used a lot in the food industry, unfortunately. And you know what gets me is so many organic products, especially, are more packaged in plastic than even the regular commercial produce.
Mm.
And then you add to that a stream of sunlight coming through the window in a grocery store. Now we've got real problems.
Yeah, I think where it really is problematic is where bottles of water sit in the heat. And that's, you know, you like take some plastic bottles of water to the beach or something like that, and it sits there. That's where maybe you get more leaching. And I swear I can detect a bit of a smell or a plastic odor sometimes when I open those types of bottles. So I try to avoid them. But, you know, what's the alternative, Layla? What do you suggest? Because
the alternative, glass water bottles. Mm-hmm. I've seen them. I've seen patients carry them. Glass water bottles, you say, but, oh, won't they break in my purse? You surround them. They are surrounded within a case.
Okay.
That's made of plastic.
Like a
cage.
Yeah.
It's like a plastic cage.
Right.
So it doesn't rattle around in your case, in your purse.
Okay.
I think that's the best way to go. I even like this idea better than stainless steel.
Right. Stainless steel, of course, for water bottles sometimes. That's a way to go. Now, what about the so-called okay plastics? I mean, there are some that are considered they're plastic, but they're less bad.
They say they're less bad, you know, like the BPA-free plastics and Tupperwares. Well, guess what? They're using not BPA, but maybe BPC or BPH or some other kind of bisphenol.
Right.
So it's not necessarily less bad. They're all kind of, it's like the lesser of the evils, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I am actually trying personally, you know, in our household to get away from all these plastics.
Yeah. And I think one cardinal rule is never microwave in plastic.
Never.
And of course, some of the microwave safe frozen foods and, you know, even healthy, quote, healthy products.
Right.
They're in
like
plastic.
Like steam in a bag vegetables. Don't do that microwave.
Yeah, don't do that. Take it out and put it into ceramic or, you know, your microwave safe kitchenware. When
exactly.
you heat it up in the microwave, because otherwise you will heat it and you'll leach the molecules of plastic into the food. And I think that that's just one exposure that we can minimize. You know, I'm not sure if I'm going to stop eating blueberries that come in a plastic clamshell container, because my hope is that, you know, they haven't sat there that long. They're not liquid. They're solid. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing to do is to go to your local farmer's market where they've got them in those tiny little cardboard crates.
There you go.
There you go. Or go pick some.
That and about, 11 gallons of gas that will cause the ozone layer to, you know, whatever. You know, there's like a lot of trade-offs in this.
Right.
In terms of protecting yourselves and protecting the environment. Okay, so let's pause now because we divide these podcasts into two parts. We've got lots more questions. A reminder, you can email your questions to radioprogram@aol.com. Radioprogram@aol.com is a place to send questions. And we'll answer them on future editions of our weekly Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.